This is John Sifferman from physicalliving.com, and with me on the phone today is Greg Carver, who is a fitness professional and the owner of StrengthBox, which is a very interesting, kind of unconventional gym. And I've kind of followed Greg's work for several years now and have never really reached out to him to really get to know him. And we did an interview recently where I sent him some questions, and he got back to me really quick with some really awesome detailed answers. He's got a really cool story. And it was his idea to do a part two over the phone, so here we are. And I've just got some more questions where I'm going to go a little deeper into, you know, unconventional fitness and fitness for older men and natural movement training and some of the other topics we discussed in the part one. So if you have not checked out part one of that interview, I'd encourage you to check that out first. You can read Greg's backstory and learn some of that stuff beforehand. I'll make sure that's easy to find. So without further ado, Greg, thank you very much for being here, and welcome
hey.
To the call.
Thank you, John. My pleasure. It's finally good to talk to you, actually, sort of not face-to-face, but actually speak with you for a change instead of just following each other online. So I'm really happy to talk with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here. So, you know, when I sent you the interview questions, you know, I always ask, you know, about your background and, you know, like what you've been doing for work and stuff like that, so to give people a picture. But I had no idea that you had kind of a long, bout with health issues all throughout your life until your late 40s, and kind of didn't get into fitness until your late 40s, and then everything changed. And so, you know, you mentioned in the first interview that there came a point where you just got frustrated with being sick and tired all the time, and, you know, you made the decision to take matters into your own hands. And so I wanted to ask you about that decision, because so many people, they don't make a change until they hit rock bottom. And so I just want to hear more about that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been through a lot of things. I just touched on it in the first interview that we did. But I don't like to dwell in too much detail on that. I mean, the bottom line is I was going through a lot of things, and then it sort of culminated, I guess, as you said, in my late 40s, where I was just experiencing a lot of fatigue and joint pain, and it almost felt like I had the flu all the time. I had flu-like symptoms, but I didn't have the flu, and they never, ever, ever went away. And I was seeking sort of traditional medical advice, and I was all they could really tell me was, well, keep taking ibuprofen, we'll monitor this, come back in a few months, and we'll go back in a few months, and it's the same story. So they were trying to get an official diagnosis, you know, everything from lupus was suggested, fibromyalgia, all this stuff. And it was finally when you take ibuprofen regularly just to make it through the day, and you take it for a long period of time, and you just say, well, this can't be my life. Like, there's got to be something better for this. And that's when I started thinking out of the box. And so I thought, well, why not try some alternative health solutions and look to sort of some natural solutions? And I didn't know what that solution would be. I didn't know whether it was going to be a naturopath. I didn't know whether it was going to be homeopathy. I didn't know whether acupuncture, I had no idea. So I just decided to, as you said, take matters into my own hands. And I saw a guy. The guy I saw was Bryce Wild, and I respected him because he's here local in Toronto, and he had a wide variety of experience. And so I said to him, look, I'm coming to you, and I don't want you to necessarily, you know, give me a naturopathic solution because you're a naturopath. I want you to kind of look at the whole picture in all your experience and say, this might work for you, Greg. This might work for you. And maybe if you can't solve the problem, point me in the direction of someone who can. And so he was very interested in my case and said he had helped similar cases before. And so I listened to what he said, and at first I was a real skeptic, because part of what he was suggesting was not just diet changes, and I thought I was eating pretty well. I mean, most people, if you ask them if they're eating pretty well, they'll say, oh, yeah, sure, I know I was eating balanced meals and all that stuff. But he also recommended a lot of supplements. They weren't things he was selling himself, so that was a plus for me. But still, it was money, and initially it was quite expensive on these supplements that I was taking, and I questioned that. And then I thought to myself, you know, Greg, if you go and see this guy, and you're spending a little money and you're spending some time to see him, and you don't do what he says, then you're just wasting your time. So if you bother to go to see him, you should do exactly what he says to the letter and give it a chance. Give it a month or two or even 3 months. And that's what I did, and that's kind of when I became a believer. So I'm not even sure to this day, you know, what it was that worked. I don't know if it was supplements. I don't know if it was diet changes. I don't know if it was just all in my mind. You know, you believe that you're going to be healed and suddenly things get better, but who cares? Like, if it works, that was kind of my attitude. Who cares if it was all in my head? It works, and those symptoms have never, ever returned.
So it sounds like you might have taken kind of a shotgun approach with this guy Bryce. You know, like, let's try all these different things and hopefully something works. I mean, what kind of, I'd love to hear more, like, what kind of supplements were you taking? Was it
nothing was out of the ordinary. You know, there was a lot of, he said, you know, the problem, Greg, is in your gut. That's where the problem is. And initially I thought, oh, no, it's not in my gut. It's my joints that are aching. it's my brain that feels fatigue. What are you talking about in my gut? And he said, no, it's chronic inflammation, and we need to start with your gut and heal your gut. Your body has been through so much over the years. You've had lung collapses. You've been hospitalized for this, hospitalized for that. And it's just reached this breaking point where it stopped functioning. It's just not functioning. So it's like an autoimmune response, and you're just producing tons of inflammation. And that's why you're feeling the fatigue. That's why you're feeling the pain. So let's start with your gut. So for him, that said, take some really good, strong probiotics. And the one, I can't even remember the brand he gave me, but it was difficult to get at the time, and it was fairly expensive because it was strong. But that was the first thing he addressed, was probiotics. He also threw in fairly high doses of good quality liquid fish oil, because that's been shown to help in inflammation. B vitamins for sure. There was a lot of testosterone and hormonal support, so things like zinc and magnesium were important to me. There were specifics he had that I can't recall at the time, but it, you know, a lot of it was that kind of hormonal support and gut health, and nothing crazy or out of the ordinary. It was things that you would have heard of before, but he went, you know, what the ones he was recommending to me were particularly high quality. They weren't cheap, you know, they came in glass bottles and everything like this, but I think it helped. It kind of made me a believer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I've been hearing a lot of stories like yours where, you know, you go to the traditional medical options and you're dealing with just all these symptoms for years and years, and then you go see somebody, alternative health, could be someone like Bryce, could be a nutritionist, could be a chiropractor, right? Who knows? And they come to a conclusion that the gut is often the root of all these problems. And
right.
So it's a familiar story. Now, did he have you get started on any, like, training? Because I know in the first interview you said that, you know, shortly afterwards you began resistance training. So I'd love to hear about
that. Yeah, so not initially. Initially I couldn't when I was in that initial stages. I didn't have the energy. I mean, just prior to having the inflammation issue, there was a period of time when I was going to the gym and I was doing what every other did at the time when they went to the gym, you know, the biceps, triceps, chest, back, that kind of workout. So I was able to get in that for a period of time, and that would happen off and on. But when I got sick again, there was just no way. I just didn't have the energy. I barely had the energy to make it through a workday. So it wasn't until we got my energy back and I was actually feeling good, and I was feeling like, you know what, I feel like a person now. I feel like an individual. And then he said, okay, we need to start in with some exercise. And he's not an exercise guy, but he said, you know, you need to do some resistance training. Well, I knew exactly what he meant by resistance training. So I got back into it slowly at first, again, starting with some traditional stuff, and then just branched out from there as I got my energy back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, so you started with some of the traditional stuff, I'm guessing, you know, like the split routines, bodybuilding type stuff, but there came a point.
Yeah, big box gym stuff, right? Like what you do in
big box
gym.
So there came a point, though, when you started making a transition to some of the less conventional stuff, you know, kettlebells, natural movement. You know, what kind of sparked that, and how did that transition look?
Boredom is what sparked it, I guess, because,
yeah.
And I think that's what happens to a lot of people. And keep in mind, this is at a time when the often overused term about functional fitness nowadays was still a bit new. You know, like at that time, CrossFit existed, but no one knew about it. The types of things we you know, the MoveNet, that wasn't even around. I mean, this was, you know, this is like very early 2000s. It was boredom that sparked it. And so I started checking out different websites and kind of got interested in more training outside. And so that's kind of where I started. Just training outside and going down to the park and where there's some pull-up bars. And I couldn't do a pull-up to save my life when I started this stuff. I never could. Never could do that stuff as a kid. I was not very athletic. But just kept banging away at it and got a little better at it. And then came a point, I was introduced to kettlebells very early on. I can't remember, to be honest, who was the first one that pointed me in the direction of kettlebells. And not many of the people were doing them at that time. And there was one club here in town, I believe they were into Sistema, like Russian martial arts. And a friend of mine had done some kettlebell work there that I knew. And he said, why don't you come along one night and this guy will show us some stuff. So I went there, and it was just the two of us and this guy who showed kettlebell swings and Turkish get-ups and all these things. And I thought, wow, this is kind of hard, but it's really cool. Like, I like it. I'm not bored. So that was kind of the beginning of getting into those types of things. And then it wasn't too long after that I actually came across CrossFit, which I no longer, you know, I no longer do that type of training. But in the very beginning I did, you know, I trained CrossFit for a couple of years at a local CrossFit gym. And I mean, that's something, because it's very highly competitive and everything. And I never thought that I'd be good at anything like that. And it did take me a while, like in the beginning, you know, like I was going pretty lightweight and stuff. But I actually got to a point where I felt pretty confident and I was respected in the gym. And that gave me this boost of confidence, like, wow, I can actually do this stuff. Like I cannot, not only can I, you know, do respectable, but I'm going to give other people a run for their money who are a lot younger than I am. And, you know, so I did that for a while. And then I kind of got a little, what do you want to say, like the whole competitiveness of that type of culture I just found it a little much for me, and I wanted to lose that type of edge. I thought, Greg, you're not, and I'm not training to, you know, win a competition here. I don't need this in my life. But still, I did learn some things for it and some things from it, you know. So it was a positive experience overall. So it just gradually you get exposed to these different things and you go from there. It's all an evolution, man.
Yeah, definitely. So I'd love to ask you, since you have the CrossFit background, I didn't know that about you either.
Yep.
You know, CrossFit, there's things I like about it, there's things I don't like about it. I'm a bit critical of them.
Me too.
They're everywhere, and you know,
yes,
everybody knows about CrossFit, and I think
yes,
that they do a lot of things right, and if it gets somebody
yes,
off the couch, then that's a huge step in the right direction. So for some,
oh, absolutely, and I think overall it attracts a certain kind of person anyway, you know, that there's a kind of person that gets attracted to that, and actually there are people that thrive on that, and they thrive on that environment, and I'm a big believer in this, man, you do whatever the hell it is you like to do. Like I said in the part one of our article, I think I said, I don't care if it's weightlifting or Zumba, I really don't care as long as you do something, and that's where it starts. It doesn't mean that those things like are going to be the best thing that you could ultimately do, but God, if you don't like what you're doing, then there's no point in doing anything, you know? Like I know so many clients I see, and they'll you know, I get these people in, and they have these goals initially. Oh, I want to lose weight, and they think they need to run because they have a friend who runs these marathons and runs, and oh, they lost so much weight, and so they force themselves to get up at, you know, 5:30 in the morning and go for a run, but they can't stand running. They hate it, so it never works, yeah, you know. So. You have to do something that you like. If you like running, okay, run. I'm going to suggest you lift some weights along with it too, so you can, you know, improve your bone density, get stronger, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you got to start with with what you like to do. So I didn't mean to throw us off the CrossFit track, but
that's fine.
Yeah.
I think it's great advice. I give that advice all the time. If you're not enjoying what you're doing, you got to find something.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be quote unquote exercise. You know, get active. Maybe it's hiking.
No.
Or
no.
Stand up paddle boarding. Or
absolutely. For some people, they need to start with taking a walk. Like that's where they need to start.
Yep.
You know, just to get outside and get moving and get active, and you get good at that, and then okay, then what's the next thing? And because that's what I find with my own training. I mean, I keep discovering new things that I want to try. And I have to keep it in check because I can't do it all. Yeah, so that was kind of my thought, you know, when I opened my gym, the Strength Box in Toronto, and that was, January 2010. And I kind of wanted, you know, there were things in CrossFit that I liked. And so I wanted to keep those things, but I wanted to remove the competitiveness. I did not want a competitive gym. I don't want to work out for time. I don't want to do Olympic lifts for time. I don't want to do 30 kipping muscle ups for time. There's things I won't do in my environment. I wanted to make it a little more inclusive, and I wanted to also incorporate more organic movements. So those are like the natural movements, move mat type of stuff that you can't really do in a CrossFit environment, because in that CrossFit environment, of course, everything needs a score. So I can't score climbing. I can't score really a hand foot crawl. I can't, you know, those movements are much more individual. And I think that they're about efficiency and how gracefully do you move, and with what ease can you move. So I wanted to incorporate that stuff, not just all this high-intensity stuff into the training.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot more subjective when you get into the natural movement stuff.
For sure.
For sure. So I do want to ask, like, since you have that CrossFit background, you know, for people who, you know, they want to try CrossFit, maybe they're, you know, in your generation of 40s, 50s, maybe 60s, and they're thinking about it, but they have concerns. Do you have any advice for somebody, you know, who is going to try it out? You know, what would you recommend?
Well, it's a kind of a tough question, honestly, John, because I think so much depends on the person and their situation. Like, are they a raw beginner, or are they, you know, already fairly fit in other areas? Are they intending on trying it out on their own, or are they looking to go to an affiliate gym? Like, there's, you know, if you're looking at going to an affiliate, there's some great ones out there, and there's some fantastic coaches out there, but there's some bad ones too, because it's not like it's super controlled. So you have to make sure that who you're getting advice from and your coach is well respected. So that's going to involve more than just a one-time visit. You're going to have to ask the other people. You're going to have to ask maybe some people that already go to that a particular affiliate, maybe some people that go to another affiliate. Like, what is it that keeps you coming back? Why do you keep going to this place? Why do you like this one better than that one? Or online reviews, because you need proper coaching. You don't want to get into an environment where it's fairly intensive and where there's competition involved, because you're going to get a score on a whiteboard where no one is paying attention to you. You need someone who's going to look out for you and make sure that you're doing movements properly, that you're not going to hurt yourself, that your form is good, and somebody that has a common sense to prioritize form over just intensity. I mean, that sounds logical. Like, you think, well, doesn't everybody do that? Well, some do and some don't. So I think you have to be careful. If you're doing it by yourself, it's really tough. because the workouts aren't exactly fun if you're doing them by yourself. I find it's much more beneficial to do them in a group environment because you get that push and there's somebody working hard right beside you, so you tend to do it too. It's not as much fun when you're just doing it by yourself. Plus, you got to know what you're doing or you're going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think a lot is very individual. It comes up to the individual, but just, yeah, be careful. Like I say, it can work for some people. If you feel like you're driven by competition and you like that high intensity, then yeah, for sure. Give it a try. Give it a whirl. Why not? If it works for you, it works. If it doesn't, well, you find something else.
Hello?
Yes, I'm here. Okay, sorry.
I lost you for a sec. Oh, that's okay.
I was just saying, give it a try and see if it works for you. If it doesn't, you find something else. But I think a lot depends on the individual.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. All right, so I wanted to talk a little bit about mobility training because you mentioned it a couple times in the first interview, you know, how you do different kinds of mobility training and you spread it throughout your day. So I guess, like, you know, how important is dedicated mobility training for you and your clients, and especially for older folks? Because it's kind of not really sexy work. You know, it's not the highest.
It's not sexy work, but it's you can make it sexy work. Maybe sexy is not the right answer, but at first it seems like, oh, God, I really have – you know, I tried training, and I train a number of people online, and some who are not used to it, and I give them these mobility routines, and they're like, oh, it's boring, I can't, you know, and they end up skipping it, and it's like, it's so bloody important, especially as you get older. There's so many benefits to even starting with simple joint rotations, and I think you know what I mean by that kind of, you know, like wrist rolls and elbow circles and arm circles and hip swings and all trunk rotations, all that kind of very basic stuff, just putting your joints through all of the planes of motion and getting the synovial fluid in there to helping reduce inflammation and keeping that range of motion that you have. So this is not flexibility training. This is just joint mobility. And I do that probably every single day because it doesn't take long. So each day I might only take, you know, 12 or 15 moves and put them together, starting with the head, and I'll work my way down my body until I get to my ankles. It just makes everything feel good. Certainly if I'm on, like, say I'm in a seated position working at the desk for a long time, or I'm in a car is another great example, and you have a distance ride, for sure I'm going to get out every now and then and do some joint rotations. It just makes you feel really good. And I think there's something very, I don't really like the term anti-aging, but optimal aging, I guess, about practicing your basic joint mobility. And then beyond that, beyond the joint rotations, I also like to do a lot of, like, light stretches and hip and ground mobility, I think, is really, really important. I'm sure you know yourself, you see a lot of people and they can't even really do a body weight squat properly. They struggle with that. It's because they never practice these types of things. So learning to improve the mobility in your hips and your knees and your ankles and all these areas, it makes everyday life so much better. And when you first start practicing it, you'll notice your limitations that you didn't even know you had until you start practicing this stuff. It took me a while to get into the practice of it, and I think that's probably true for a lot of people. But what I like to do when I'm leading a class, it's easy, and it's easy for me, and it's easy for the people in the class because I'm doing it in front of them and they're doing it with me, so it's a group, and in a group environment things are easy. When I'm doing it by myself, I like to, in my gym, I like to just roll out a mat. I have these, they're like MMA style mats, but they're portable, so they roll up and roll out, and I put out a mat and I get in my sock feet usually, so they kind of slides on the mat, and I just work on some nice flows and patterns, and I put some peaceful music on, like not hard driving music, but something a little more relaxed. And I just enjoy that time because, again, like I said in the first part, it's my time. So there's the cell phone is nowhere near me. I'm not worried about returning an email. This is just, you know, 15 or 20 minutes of me and for my health. And I think that's, it's almost like meditation. I think it's so positive.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think you have a really intelligent approach, probably more intelligent than most people. Well, definitely more intelligent than most people when it comes to mobility training, because so many people either they don't do it or they only do it for like a few minutes. You know, they do a couple of the main moves, you know, a couple hip circles, some shoulder circles, you know, okay, I've got my mobility done, but the joint is important.
Yeah. And they do them messily too. Like I see that a lot. People, like, they'll do arm circles. Okay. They swing their arms around a couple of times, but they're not doing it with any intention. So when you bring your arms up, you know, trying to get an extension through the shoulder and stuff like that, just being a little mindful of exactly what it is you're working on and thinking, why are you working on it too? So like wrist mobility is important to me now. And I never thought, God, 10 years ago, I was like, wrist mobility, really? What do I need that for? I'm not trying to get muscular wrists. And, but, you know, if you have to practice a handstand or any kind of hand balancing or even do a front squat in the clean position, yeah, you're going to need some wrist mobility. Even for doing a push-up, for a lot of beginners, when they get down on the floor and they try and do a push-up, one of the common complaints I hear is, it hurts my wrist. Can I do it on my fists? And I say, well, yes, you can do it on your fists. For sure, that has benefits too. A lot of martial arts guys do it that way, but I want you to start working on your wrist mobility, so that shouldn't hurt either, you know. Or if you're crawling on your like a hand-foot crawl or walking on all fours, you want to have that good wrist mobility so that it doesn't hurt you. And, I think it's really, really valuable.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned, you know, there are so many benefits, and we could probably talk for an hour about it. You know, just mobility.
Yeah, and all these have been documented. I mean, people can just Google, you know, joint rotations and mobility and health benefits. You'll find all of the answers. But just thinking, but it just makes sense. You know, like and this was Steve Maxwell, and I had this in my part one too, because it was a quote that he said that maybe he heard it from somewhere, but it stuck with me. He said, I don't meet many 80 or 90-year-olds that wish that they had a bigger bench press when they were younger. But there's for sure people that age that say, I wish I had worked on my mobility and kept up with my mobility, because those people find it hard to get out of a chair without assistance. And it's that kind of stuff, I honestly think, John, that is life-saving. It will save your life. If you keep moving, keep practicing your mobility, keep practicing even bodyweight squats, man, that, and don't stop, that stuff will save your life.
Yeah, and I mean, you understand the implications of it. And, you know, so I wish, I haven't figured out how to, like, sell mobility training. It's a hard sell for most people.
It is.
But
it is.
You know, it's like there are so many benefits, and if you just stuck with it long enough to experience those benefits and get out of kind of the boring stage where you're still learning things, you can't really move at all anyways, so it's frustrating.
Right.
And you get to the point where, yeah, you can take it down to the ground movements where you get a little bit deeper and it's a little bit more fun and it feels
And you make it into a flow. You make it into a flow. And you can't make it into a flow when you first start because you don't know where you're doing. You don't understand the movements or where one fits into another. So I think that's part of when you say selling it is showing, well, here's what's possible at the end. Here's how we're going to get you there. And here's all the steps. You learn some of the stuff individually, and then you start piecing it together. And then it just becomes a creative thing to see, okay, where can this go? And, I have fun with some of the movements. I mean, I'm no expert in this stuff by any means when it comes to practicing it. I think I understand it theoretically, and I do practice it, and I do what I can do. But for sure, there's a lot better movers out there than I am. But again, that to me, that doesn't matter. I'm just doing what I can do, right? And then flexibility thing is another thing, and that's another different animal altogether. And that's another one of my goals, is to try and work on my flexibility a little bit. But I'll separate that stuff. So that stuff will generally be after I train, because I just find that, man, I think I could be so much stronger if my shoulders were just a bit more open, or, you know, like I struggle so much with overhead lifts and doing handstands and things because I find it due to kyphosis and a bit of a forward head. And again, a lot of this is not just tight muscles, and it's actually congenital in my case. It's like, it's just the way I'm made. It's the shape of my skeleton. But I know that things can improve over time. And I just look at some guys and how they're able to completely lock stuff out of their head, and it's over their head, and it just looks so easy for them, whereas I'm struggling. I have to use all my strength because I don't have the benefit of being able to lock out. And I just thought, man, that's one thing I wish I'd started earlier on in life, is working on that stuff, because I think I'd be so much further down the road and would open up so many more windows. So I think that's important too. Mobility for sure, like that's number one. I'm just saying for me personally, I also want to improve my flexibility a little bit.
Yeah, I think everybody, it needs to be part of every, you know, holistic balance fitness plan.
Yeah,
for sure. Now, Now a lot of people, there's a lot of confusion about flexibility and stretching. And so would you be able to just like sum up kind of your approach to it? You know, for some.
Yeah, well, the way I think of this is I prioritize mobility. And what I mean by mobility is, and don't take this as a textbook definition, these are just my thoughts, but it's the ability to move a joint through all of the range of motion under your own power. So in other words, like if you're standing on both feet and you lift one leg up as high as you can and keep it straight and don't have anyone helping you, then that's mobility. How high can you stand on one foot and lift one leg? But if I was standing in front of you and I grabbed your ankle when you lifted up your leg and I put you in an even higher position, which I could get you to, then that is flexibility. And when you work on flexibility, you'll actually feel a stretch in the muscles. If you're just working on mobility, you may not feel a stretch. It's just moving the joint, right? So flexibility, I never train that before a workout, especially a strength workout, because I know there's a lot of research that says it can actually be, it can diminish your strength. You don't want to overstretch a muscle before you actually train it. But you can certainly. The time to do it, or just do it at a separate time. And for most people, they don't need to stretch that often. I think it's not like something you need to do every day. It's just something you need to be consistent about. Mobility, on the other hand, you can do as much as you want.
Yeah, oh, I agree completely. All right, so I want to kind of transition. You know, we've been talking about mobility training. I want to kind of go to the other end of the spectrum and talk about barbell training.
Yes, sir.
Because I think you probably have a unique approach to barbell training because, you know, you mentioned in your first interview that, you know, you're not a power lifter, you're not a bodybuilder. It seems like most of your clients probably aren't either.
No, they're not.
You know, you're pretty good at getting yourself and your clients strong. And so I'd love to know kind of how do you approach barbell training for your clients and your goals?
Well, when I'm working with my clients and they're new, I assure them, first of all, look, I don't expect you to throw up big weights here. As a matter of fact, we're going to start really, really light because we're going to work on the mechanics of the move, and I want to teach you the moves and teach you why we need to do these. So we need to deadlift, for instance, because lifting heavy off the floor is a really good primal functional skill that everybody should be able to do, and it transfers into everyday life, whether you're picking up heavy bags of groceries or carrying luggage or lifting a heavy rock. I mean, this is about as caveman as it gets. And so we work on the mechanics, and I'll teach them that, look, the deadlift, it may be technically a pulling exercise, but I don't want you to think of pulling the bar up. I want you to think of it as a push. So push your heels to the floor, like getting them to think a little bit differently. And once they have the mechanics and I work on making it consistent for them, once the lift is consistent, then we can start adding weight. And it's to the individual's own comfort level. So I have some clients that won't lift heavy, and they probably never will because they just, they're afraid of it. They've never experienced it. They don't want to go there. So for those clients, I don't push them that much. They do what they can. I want to keep them happy. I might push them very gently, but it's nothing I'm going to rush into. There's other clients I have that yeah, they want they're the guy that's, yeah, I want to get to 405 pounds. Like, get me there, Greg. And I'm like, okay, it's not going to happen overnight, but give us some time and we'll see what we can do, right? And, but I just find for myself, I really like it because I, when I think of where I came from and what I can do now, I think, God, Greg, you're pretty strong. Like, and I've never felt like any, I don't think I've ever gotten injured once from any of these compound lifts that I do. So by a compound lift, I mean a multi-joint full body lift, like a deadlift is a compound lift. A back squat or a front squat is a compound lift. You know, even an overhead press, even a bench press is a compound lift. You're not isolating your muscles. I've never gotten hurt from any of those exercises. And the amount of injuries in the gym, I can't even think of one directly from a lift like that. Like sometimes it'll happen, you know, somebody will do a deadlift and then they'll just go to put a 10-pound weight away and they'll twist the wrong way, rotate their body the wrong way, and boom, they're injured. So oftentimes it's the little things. It's not the lift itself, or they might have had a bad sleep the night before, slept the wrong way. You know, it's a but I've always felt very safe in those exercises.
Now, why do you think that is? Because, you know, I mean, are you taking a – obviously, you mentioned the technique is really important. You got to get consistent and make sure you're doing a proper –
and not be too much of a hurry.
So, like, lower volume, lower frequency?
We do low, pretty low-volume lifts. So when I program my lifts, it's generally 5 reps at a time, max. Sometimes we'll go over that, but not for things like deadlifting and squatting generally. If we're lifting heavy, you know, I keep it like 3 to 5 lifts at a time, lots of rest in between your sets, watching form like a hawk, and just progressing, like understanding that things take time. So not increasing your weights too much too fast. Things take time. And I understand that, like even when I was talking about wrist mobility and stuff at first, like when I'm on my hands, like doing any kind of hand balancing, man, it took like over a year, I think, just for my wrist to build up the strength to be able to handle that, just in my wrist to get all the tendons and the ligaments as strong as everything else. And I think that's true for the big barbell lifts as well. It just takes time. But your body will be accustomed to it. And you get to know, you get to understand your body you know, yeah, I'm safe. I'm lifting this. You just feel it mentally.
Well, I think that's really good advice, you know, especially for people who, you know, kind of aware that if you want to make it for the long term, you have to take your time with everything.
You have to take your time. You have to have rest, right? I'm not going to come in deadlift one day and then come in and do it the next day. Like, I think the older you get, I think the your strength training frequency can actually decrease because you do need the recovery time, and I think that's important too. You need to be fresh. You need to be ready to go. You don't want to beat yourself up, right? It's training. It's about building yourself up, not about beating yourself down. I also change our programming every month. So the way I work it is I kind of program 5 different days of workouts, and this is just a strength portion of our class that we do at StrengthBox. So I'll program 5 different days of workouts. Each day we'll have one main superset. So a superset is like 2 exercises that are done back to back. And so people just rotate through those different days. So they may start on, say, okay, this is day 1 and I'm doing a back squat and that's being supersetted with maybe, a strict kettlebell press. And so they'll do those 2 exercises. They might superset them 5 times. That's their strength portion of the workout. The next time they come in, they're going to be doing day 2. Next time, day 3. Once they get down to day 5, they go right back to day 1. And I keep that programming the same for the whole month, and then the next month I'll change everything. And so I change all the exercises. Having said that, the mainstays of having some kind of a hip hinge, usually a deadlift, some kind of a squatting exercise. It could be a Zercher squat. It could be a front squat. It could be a back squat. It could be an overhead squat. Some kind of pressing exercise, whether it's a strict press, a push press, bench press, like, you know, there's a pulling exercise, like a hang power clean. Those basics will all be in there, but just some different format. And that helps keep people from not getting too bored too. But having the lifts fairly consistent for 1 month at least also allows them to track their progress. And it gives them some flexibility too, because it's not like, okay, today everyone is doing back squat, right? Like, they have some flexibility in choosing what lifts they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, it seems like a really smart, you know, balanced approach.
Well, it took me a while to get there. So you have to, you know, in the beginning, as I said, it was just, okay, today's back squat day, and that's what everyone's doing. But then you realize, well, I have some clients that aren't able to come that often. So they come into the gym, and they say, oh, my God, every time I come in here, there's a bloody back squat. Like, all we do is back squat. And I said, well, that's because you weren't here yesterday and the day before. So I just figured out a little smarter way to program that works for me. And people seem to enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think a lot of people make the mistake of, you know, they know they need to do strength training and they want to do it right, and so they try and find a program online instead of getting a coach.
Yeah.
And all the programs online are by powerlifters and bodybuilders and, you know, who are lifting
right.
4, 5, 6 days a week. And it's like,
right.
Well, I mean, it's doable, but only if you're living that. You know, most people aren't, and so it just doesn't work.
Right.
For
most. It's nice to have a coach. Like, I'll say that. It's really nice to have a coach, and you know, I've got the pleasure of working with some – I mean, I have my own coaches that I admire and work with a lot. But at the Strength Box, I've got some great people that are coaching there along with me that I'm really happy with the people that I have now, because they know what they're doing. And my clients trust them. So having that person that you can look up to and can kind of look over you and also help guide your programming, making modifications if necessary, and that's also a big part of it. I think is so, so crucial. Like, what's the point of coming in and, you know, asking somebody to do a back squat if they can't even do a body weight squat without wincing in pain? Like, you have to make it appropriate to the individual that you're working with. So that involves some kind of an assessment, making sure that, you know, when it comes to the squat, can they body weight squat? If they can, maybe they start with a goblet squat. You know, maybe that's what they do. Like, you don't have to load up with tons of weight on a squat rack the first time that they walk into the gym. As I remind people, there's plenty of time to get there. Let's do this sensibly. Let's do it smartly. You're going to be a lot happier in the end.
Yeah, and you'll be stronger in the end too.
Yeah, for sure.
So it seems like, you know, you're mostly focused on working with like Generation Xers and baby boomers.
Yes.
What do you think these people in this demographic, what do you think they need the most when it comes to health and fitness and training? What are they missing? You know, any thoughts on that department?
Well, I think we've touched on them, honestly, John. I think mobility is a big one, because I think people just don't do it and don't understand what it is that they need to do. And then most people need to strength train. I mean, cardio and stuff like that is easy to get. That stuff, like, you don't need expertise to – that stuff is fairly easy. But having someone teach you and train you in strength, I think, is super, super valuable. Once they reach a certain level, then I think it's really interesting to show people what they're capable of. Not just in terms of barbell lifting, but other things that they may not have even thought of, like some gymnastics types moves that I never thought I would be ever doing in my life. I thought, my God, the last person ever tried any of that stuff. I suck at it. But it kind of opens their eyes, you know, because you want to show people of a certain age that, man, we're not getting any younger here. So as you age, you want to open up your possibilities so that you're not just, you know, sitting on a golf course somewhere. I mean, okay, that can be one activity that can be enjoyable, but you want to be able to do active stuff like adventure stuff too. So you don't just want to, you know, go to your retirement and sit in a rocking chair. You want to experience life. So you kind of get people fired up that way. And so it's what can you do?
Yeah. No, that's a great question.
So I don't know if that really answers your question, but I think, you know, it's mobility first, like as I said, strength training, and then, you know, let's go from there. Let's work on some natural movements. Okay, well, there's one that you and I have something in common with because we both have that experience in MoveNet. Like, it's shocking to me how many people can't crawl on all fours. Like, they struggle with it. So you ask them to do like a hand-foot crawl or just walking on all fours, and they're rotating all over the place. They're patterning. They don't understand because they haven't done it since they were a little kid. Well, that's a really primal skill to have. Jumping, there's another one. Oh, my gosh, how many adults have I asked to jump onto a box or a platform that's, say, 10 or 12 inches off of the ground? Not particularly high. So a lot of people will stand in front of that and look at it, and they get scared because they don't jump. Adults don't jump. Adults sit, adults stand, adults walk around, but we don't jump. So if you don't practice it, you lose it, and they're kind of shocked by that. I said, God, I should be able to jump on that. And I said, well, yes, you should, and you can. It's just going to take some training. Or they jump and they land like they land so loudly they don't understand how to absorb the impact. So it's those kind of things that I think will really help you later in life, learning how to balance, learning how to jump, learning how to run, learning how to crawl, because those very organic movements, I just think that they're going to make life easier if you can do all that stuff.
No, I totally agree. I think that's like mobility, strength training, and natural movement training. That's like, those are some of the top three things for people who've got a few more years under their belt.
Yeah, for sure. And again, like the natural movement training, like sometimes it's like mobility. It can be a tough sell in the beginning. Like it's not easy to practice on your, like to do that stuff on yourself, especially I think when you're a little older and you're living in an urban environment and you say, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, or maybe it's winter outside. Like, how do I practice this stuff? So that's why I think a facility like mine actually can be very, very useful because, okay, here's a safe environment where everyone's going to be doing this stuff because you're not going to look stupid like you're out in a playground somewhere in the middle of winter trying to crawl around on your hands and knees. And we kind of have fun with it. Like, we don't take ourselves so seriously. So, yeah, we'll laugh and have fun, but you're practicing all this stuff and you feel like a little kid. And, okay, let's swing off of this beam and let's, you know, you just kind of make it fun. And it just, you see the smiles on people's faces and, it kind of makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about, I've got a smile on my face now because I'm just thinking of certain clients. And I can see their facial expressions when they go through these movements. You know, I'll set up a little obstacle course or something to get them warmed up, and they're going through it. And, you know, I have one woman, when she first came in, she's like, oh, my God, I can't do any of this stuff. What am I supposed to do? I can't climb on that wall. I can't do this. I can't. And now she's doing all this stuff, and she's like, I can't believe I'm doing this. Like, this is so stupid. And I said, yes, but it's wonderful, and you are doing it, and you're enjoying it too. So, it's very satisfying to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wanted to ask you too, because you said in the first interview that, you know, you do a lot of MoveNet, but you're not, you know, super dogmatic. You know, you do some, but you're not afraid to like throw in an old fashioned arm workout too. And
no, I did one. I did an arm workout this week. Yes.
Right. Yeah, and I found that a lot of people who discover MoveNet absolutely, you know, who put in the time and see the value in it, they love it, and they also choose to continue with some of the other, you know, non-MoveNet, more traditional fitness and strength and conditioning stuff. I was just wondering, why do you think that is? And I guess, why is it for you?
I'm sorry, the question is, why do they continue to do, why do they do other things, or why don't?
Yeah, well, I just,
why,
like,
don't
why
they
do
other
things? I guess, why do you think so many people, you know, they do MoveNet, and then they do all these other things too. You know, whereas MoveNet, you know, they would tell you it's an all-inclusive system, and it is. It can absolutely be a total health and fitness system. But, you know, for me, like, I see a lot of value in, you know, some traditional barbell training and kettlebell training, which, you know, falls into some of the MoveNet categories of lifting and carrying, et cetera.
It can. I think a lot of people do get dogmatic because if you get too much into a subject, you know, you can take anything and make it like religion. You can, you know, so this becomes your thing and this becomes what you practice, so you end up specializing. I mean, you can specialize in MoveNet, so you can argue that, well, it's a non-specialty system, but if that's all you do, well, you specialize in MoveNet. But again, I think it comes down to you got to do what you like to do. And it was Steve Atlas who has coached me for a few years, and I thought he's a good example of somebody who smashes the stereotypes, because that guy, I mean, he was taught by Ido Portal for a few years, so he's a very good mover. He has the flexibility of a gymnast and dancer. Like, you know, he can do middle splits and front splits, no problem. Forward folding like pancake with a perfect flat back that I just don't understand how these people do it. Well, on my back is arched all over the place. But he's a super muscular guy that looks like he can walk onto any bodybuilding stage at any given time because he also bodybuilds. But his thing, and this is what I took for him, is for him, the bodybuilding is like a reward. And so it's completely non-functional. It's only aesthetic, and he makes no apologies for that. Yes, I'm training aesthetics, but you know what? It's the last thing I do. So I've trained my skills first. I've trained my functional stuff first. So once all – and I've trained my mobility because I'll do that in the morning. So once that's all stuff is done and I've got my homework in, I want to do an arm workout or a chest and back workout, I'm going to do it. So that's kind of his approach. And I thought, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And I don't think – you know, for an older guy, I think a bit of hypertrophy is a good thing. I mean, you tend to lose muscle mass as we age if it's not trained. So I don't see anything wrong with trying to maintain or even increase it.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Does that make sense? Like again, it comes down to what I said in the beginning. You got to do what you love. So if you don't like doing arm workouts, you're not going to do an arm workout if it doesn't interest you, and that's fine. It's like, but it interests me, so don't knock what I do.
Right. So, you know, so you've also mentioned, I wanted to get your take on, like, are there certain movements or skills or conditioning exercises that you think everybody should be able to do, like standards? Like, we've mentioned a few, like, you know, hand-foot crawling, squatting. You know, like, what are some things that you think most people should aspire to, you know, like the basics?
If I'm thinking real basics, I think of the foundations or pillars, whatever you want to call them, of strength. So you need the ability to squat and under load, like body weight squat one thing, but squat under load. You need the ability to hip hinge. So that's when I think of a hip hinge, I'll think like a deadlift or a kettlebell swing, which is a bit different from the squat because it's more posterior chain training, you know, glutes and hamstrings and stuff like that. You need good pushing strength, whether that's doing a push-up or an overhead press. You need good pulling strength, whether that's lifting up an external object like a row or using a pull-up bar to do a pull-up. I think you combine those elements of pushing, pulling, hip hinging, squatting, maybe get some rotation in there, you're good to go. You should be able to control and manipulate your own body weight. So that means the basics, body weight squats, pull-ups, push-ups, should be able to do those. Those are, you know, the foundations of body weight training. And in addition to that, we should be able to handle external load. So that's what we think of when we think of resistance training. That's what I would prioritize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's all. Those are all good advice, good suggestions.
We've already kind of covered the natural movements, right? The organic movements, like just learning to move as a human being would move. So as you say, the crawling, the running, the walking, the climbing, like those. Don't have to specialize in those areas and be the best mover on the planet, but we need to have a certain basic level of ability so that you can function in an emergency. You could save your life. You could save someone else's. I think those skills are really important.
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like that's like PE 101, like every human.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, absolutely. We are the average of what, you know, your average American is nowhere near an indication of what an average human is capable of or should be capable
no.
of.
I mean, no. No, definitely
so the bar,
not.
The bar has been set so much lower and lower and lower over the years. People have
yes.
just forgotten that, like, it was normal not that long ago for pretty much everybody to do all this stuff. And now it's
well, that's
scary.
Right.
Like, it's different.
I mean, things have changed in our lifetime for sure. Certainly they have in mind in terms of what people are capable of and the way people look. And, man, there's huge changes. So I think this stuff is absolutely vital and it's important.
I just
feel like a connection with their physical body. And probably not, we're not talking about your readers, because I would assume your readers have an interest in fitness and they're doing stuff and follow your advice. But there's so many people out there that are just kind of wandering through life and they have no connection with their physical body at all. Like, they don't even realize they have one. They just walk around in it and go from one buffet table to the other. And complain about the aches and pains and blame their doctor, and it's a sad situation. You know, I was staying at a while ago, and I was in a hotel, and I was in the U.S. You know, they had these breakfast rooms, and people sitting next to me were quite overweight, and they were loading up with the waffles and the cereals and all this stuff, and just eating gargantuan proportions. And I overhear them talking about this one woman, how her back was aching and how she was so angry at her doctor and she was going to sue him and this and that and the other thing because he made her pain worse. And it's just like, oh my God, you just need to lose some weight. You need to realize you have a body and it needs to be taken care of. And I understand people have issues, like I get it. But it's, you've got to take some personal responsibility for this, and you've got to have some pride in your body and not lose that connection. I just think it's so important. You know, I look at my dad. He's a big role model for me. So my dad is he's 91. He'll be 92 in April. And he's going strong, man. He's living out in the wilds of Nova Scotia. next to a lake in a rural property, and I talked to him this week, and he's brought in a couple of cord of wood that he's, you know, he's out there, and he has some help, but he'll split wood himself. He'll carry it in by himself, and he said, well, Greg, I'm not like I used to be, you know, like I'll carry in a load, and then I have to rest, and then after a while, I'll carry another load. It's not like I can keep going. He's 91. mm-hmm. So I think that's amazing. He still taps his own maple syrup. He makes maple syrup every year. He plays pool, and he's like a champion, legendary pool player. He never was when he was younger, but, I mean, this came to him later in life. And so he's beaten all the guys in their 20s and 30s, so he's a bit of a local legend down there. He just keeps going because he loves life. He's connected. He's active. He has a purpose. I'm sure this time of year already he's starting, because it's October now, and I'm sure he's already thinking about Christmas, because every Christmas Santa Claus is a big thing. So he plays Santa Claus, never for money, never in a commercial mall environment, but always for charity. And it's a big thing, and he's in huge demand. And so he does these charity events and local community parades where he's on the fire truck, and he looks forward to that stuff so much. So it gives you a purpose to live. And he just never stopped doing stuff, right? So when he dies, I'm sure it's going to be in some, you know, he'll be doing something he loves. He'll be out in the woods. He'll be, you know, so, and he'll just go. So that's kind of the way we all need to aspire to, I think.
Yeah, I certainly do. I hope if I live a long time, I hope that I'm able to keep up with men like him. For sure.
Yeah, there's no guarantee, but we have to do what we can to ensure that the odds are in our favor, right? So The healthier that we can be, the stronger that we can be, and the, you know, like I'm a big believer too in this, and I think you are too, is getting used to the idea of a little bit of discomfort every now and then, so that your life actually becomes more comfortable. So we touched on a bit of cold water dousing, and this is a practice you do too, isn't it, John, from time to time?
Yep. Oh, I've been pretty much cold showers for the last year and a half or so.
Right, right. And it's like our society, again, we become so addicted to comfort that the idea of a little discomfort, just people can't take it. They can't stand it. And so learning to be a little bit uncomfortable every now and then actually makes life pleasurable, because your tolerance goes way up. So if you're sitting in a room and it's a little bit hot or it's a little bit cold, you're not going to complain. You're actually, you're okay. You're safe. And I think that has a lot to do with our longevity and optimal aging too. It's just you become stronger inside and more adaptable too.
Yeah, absolutely. The idea of hormesis, you know, you have the right amount of stress and you're going to adapt and get stronger in some way, just, you know, fitness-wise, but hormonally, and your immunity and all these different systems can all adapt in amazing ways.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm a big believer in making it a point to get uncomfortable in different ways. And, you know, cold showers is one, and going barefoot is another, you know. And
yes,
each
huge.
One of these, you know, they offer tons of benefits apart from the discomfort and the physiological adaptation. So it's like once you get past that initial difficult stage, like this is really cold or those rocks really hurt or whatever it is, then you start to experience the benefits and say, wow, this was so worth it. I can't imagine doing life any other way. You know?
Well, it just makes you feel so much better. It makes you feel alive, and any discomfort becomes like it's very bearable. And it's actually it can be the way that you approach it too, because when I first thought of dousing, and before I had gotten into the practice, I used to think of it as, oh my God, it's just going to be so cold. I don't know if I can do this. I don't like cold. I really don't like cold water. I'm not sure I can do this. And then I realized it's not about the cold. It's a warming sensation. So once the initial shock is gone, you feel so warm afterwards. It's like steam comes off your body or something, and you stay warm for like 30 minutes or even an hour afterwards. So once I kind of changed my mindset and said, wait a minute, Greg, this isn't about the cold. This is an initial shock, yes, but then you're going to feel so warm and you're going to feel wonderful. And so just that little slight mental adjustment really, really helped.
Yeah, it's such an irony, because like looking back, you know, having, you know, I do cold showers now regularly, still take a hot shower every once in a while. After I finish a hot shower, I'm always cold. After I finish a cold shower, I'm always hot. It's such an irony.
It makes sense.
And,
right.
I know, right? It's so funny.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
When I used to, one of the things, Bryce Wild, when I was going to see him, and I was also complaining that I had cold feet all the time, like really, really cold feet. I just could never seem to get them warm. And he recommended cold water marching. And I said, what's that? And he said, you're going to fill a bathtub with water as cold as you can, and you're going to just march around in it before you get to go into bed. And I just thought, well, that sounds really stupid. But I tried it. My God, it really worked. You were really warm. I was like, this stuff works. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, Greg, I've got to jump off the phone here, but this has been an awesome discussion. Thank you so much for taking over an hour to chat with me.
Oh, my pleasure. Time has kind of flown because I'm talking about what I'm passionate about. So it's been a real pleasure.